The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, an episode of The Avenger from 1945 and the first episode of The Adventures of Superman from 1940. We'll also hear a 1943 report from the Canadian Broadcasting Company on rationing food for Christmas dinner. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, The Baby from Krypton on the first episode of The Adventures of Superman from 1940. We'll also hear a 1943 report on rationing food for Christmas dinner. Right now, Death Meets the Boat on an episode of The Avenger from 1945 as WMKY presents The Golden Age of Radio.
Avenger.
The road to crime ends in a trap that justice sets. Crime does not pay. Avenger, sworn enemy of evil, is actually Jim Brandon, a famous biochemist. Through his numerous scientific experiments, Brandon has perfected several inventions to aid him in his crusade against crime as the Avenger. Most remarkable of these inventions is the highly secret diffusion capsule, which cloaks him in the black light of invisibility. Brandon's assistant, the beautiful Fern Collier, is the only one who shares his secrets and knows that he is the man the underworld fears as the Avenger. And now, the Avenger and Death meets the boat.
I love meeting boats, Jim. I'm glad you decided to come down to welcome your old friend Dr. Ludlow home.
Oh, he's been in Australia doing research for 3 years, Fern. I'm eager to have a talk with him.
Oh, there's something thrilling about a boat that's just landed from far off places. Look at all these people, Jim. Every single one of them looks excited and happy.
You're an incurable romanticist, Fern. Oh, there's Dr. Ludlow.
Well, the crowd of reporters around him.
Oh, I suppose we ought to wait until the interviews are over before we barge in, huh?
Well, Dr. Ludlow isn't the only celebrity aboard. There's the cameraman taking pictures of a pretty girl. Let's walk over and watch them.
All right, Fern.
Do you think she's a movie star, Jim?
I haven't the faintest idea. That big hat she's wearing hides part of her face.
Okay, Miss Austin, that's fine. Now, just one more shot. Suppose you hold on to the rail with one hand and pretend you're waving to someone with the other.
You mean like this?
Swell, swell. Hold it, Miss Austin. Oh, thank you. Now, a few questions, if you don't mind.
Well, I...
Is this your first trip to the States?
Why, no, I was born here. But I've lived in Australia since I was six.
I see. How long do you plan to stay?
Indefinitely. I intend to settle down here.
Pardon me, but you're Miss Claire Austin, aren't you?
Yes.
I'm Coakley, miss.
Oh, the chauffeur?
Yes, miss. I was with your late father for more than 10 years.
Well, I'm glad you've come, Coakley. I was beginning to wonder if anyone was going to meet me.
What about your luggage, miss?
Well, it's all through the customs. You can put it in the car. I'll show you where it is.
Oh, Miss Austin, thanks a lot for those pictures. I'd like to interview you for a feature story later. Will you be in town for a while?
I think so. Goodbye.
Goodbye, and look for your picture in the Morning Herald tomorrow.
I will. Jim, ask that reporter who she is.
Okay, Fern. You do hate to miss a celebrity, don't you?
Hurry, ask him. He's getting ready to leave.
Say, Scoop.
Yeah?
Who is that young lady?
Oh, that was Claire Austin.
Claire Austin?
Yeah, the gal is going to her at the Austin Millions when she comes of age in 2 days. Swell looking dish, isn't she?
Copley, I understood that Mr. Hayden, my father's lawyer, would be waiting for me at my townhouse.
No, he's spending the weekend at his lodge in the country, Miss Claire. He asked me to drive you directly out there.
Well, we could have unloaded some of this luggage in town.
Well, frankly, miss, that never occurred to me. I thought you'd rather come out here direct from the boat.
Well, how much further is this lodge?
We'll be there in half an hour.
Is that the lodge just ahead there, Copley?
Yes, miss. I'll signal them we're coming.
This certainly is a secluded spot.
Yes, miss. It's a sort of hideaway.
Hideaway?
Well, what I mean is that it's quiet and restful, miss. Here we are. We'll have to get out on that side, miss. There's a high fence over here.
All right.
Now, this way. I'll get someone to help me with the luggage.
Well, hello, Miss Austin. Welcome to the States.
Well, thank you. I suppose you're Mr. Hayden, my lawyer?
No. Come in and I'll explain myself. Tell me, did you have a good trip?
Yes, thank you. Where is Mr. Hayden, please?
All in good time, Miss Austin. To be quite frank, there's been a slight change in plans.
Well, I should think so. I expected to meet Mr. Hayden in town. Don't tell me we've driven all the way out here.
Oh,
and...
why don't you put her wise, Gus? We're wasting time.
Yes, I guess we are at that.
Copley, what is all this? Who is this man?
Never mind that. All you need to know, Miss Austin, is that you've been kidnapped.
Kidnapped?
Now, if you'll just do what we say.
But I won't. I'm getting out of here.
Grab her, Copley.
There, take it easy, Miss
Austin.
Let me
go.
Now, you better do what Gus tells you to. Otherwise...
Let me go.
Take her in the next room, Copley, and put these bracelets on her hands and feet.
No!
Show me in there.
Yes, everything's set. Get the steam in there.
That Austin dame's a wildcat.
Did you get those bracelets on her?
Yeah, but it wasn't easy.
Well, as soon as Thelma gets a line on her voice and speech, we'll get going.
Say, Gus.
Yes?
Those two dames look enough alike to be twins. Where'd you find that Thelma?
She worked for me once before on a job in Canada. When you showed me those pictures of Claire Austin, I was struck by the resemblance. And all we had to do with Thelma was... bleach her hair.
Well, what about the accent? Can she handle that?
Oh, that's easy. She's passed herself off as an English blue blood more than once. Now, Copley, let's get down to business. Did everything at the boat go without a hitch?
Not exactly, Gus. Some newspaper guy took Austin's picture before I could get to her.
What?
Well, I couldn't help it. But that can't hurt anything, can it? These two dames look exactly alike.
Don't be a fool, Copley. It's little mistakes like that that ruin the best kind of setups. What paper was that reporter from?
The Morning Herald.
Oh, good. Since it's a morning paper, that'll give us time to get that picture. So please, see if Thelma's ready. We've got to get into town at once.
Okay, Pete. Tell me everything you know about Stamford's death.
Well, Mr. Brandon, he was alive here in the dark room when I went to lunch around noon.
Uh-huh. What was he doing when you left?
Developing the pictures he took this morning for tomorrow's paper.
Is there any way to find out if Stamford had a visitor, Pete?
No, those back stairs are the only way in and out of this dark room. They lead right out to the street.
Oh. Now, there's no connecting door into the newspaper office.
No, sir.
Well, what do you think happened to Stamford, Pete?
I figure he broke that bottle of acid accidentally, and the fumes overcame him, and he fell as he hit his head against the corner of that shelf.
Uh-huh. Almost too simple, isn't it?
Well, that must have been the way it happened. The bottle of acid is broken, and Stamford has a big lump on his head.
Pete, would Stamford have a list of the pictures he was developing?
Oh, sure, he'd have a list of each series of plates.
Where are they?
Oh, there, that sheet of notepaper on that spike. He only took two sets of pictures so far today.
Let me see it, will you, please?
Oh, here.
Mm-hmm. First six plates, opening of New Market. Are all six of those plates here, Pete?
Yeah, here they are. He must have been working on those when he passed out.
Okay. Next, four plates on board boat.
Nope, can't find those.
Now make sure, Pete.
No, they're not here, Mr. Brandon.
Now, who do you suppose would want to steal four perfectly beautiful shots of Miss Claire Austin?
What's that, Mr. Brandon?
Oh, never mind, Pete. Give me a little more light over here, will you? I want to take another look at this bump on Stamford's head.
Well, here, I'll focus this desk lamp on him.
Oh, thanks.
You knew Stamford, didn't you, Mr. Brandon?
Well, I saw him on the boat this morning. Say, the position of this bump is mighty odd.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, if Stamford hit his head against that shelf, the lump would have to be toward the back of his head. This lump's right on top.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of it?
Well, I'd say he was hit from the rear by a blackjack.
Say.
I'll call the doctor in on this right away. But I think he'll agree with me that Stamford was murdered. Well, there's Claire Austin's townhouse, Fern. Now, I'll wait here in the car while you play reporter and try to get an interview.
But, Jim, you say you don't suspect Claire Austin of murdering Stamford. So why should we waste time on her?
Those stolen plates bearing Miss Austin's picture are the only clue we have, Fern. Maybe they tie up in some way with a motive for this murder.
How many days' grace did the Herald give you?
Three. I promised them a scoop if they'd call it an accident that long.
Then you don't want me to mention anything to Miss Austin about Stamford's death?
No. Keep the interview general. Try to find out if she has any friends or enemies in this country. What she plans to do when she inherits her money and things like that, you know. It's just possible that someone is trying to blackmail her.
All right, I'll do my best. But I still think we're barking up the wrong tree, Jim.
Here's your camera. Study her reactions when you ask to take some pictures.
Okay.
Don't miss a thing, Fern. A woman's touch is what we need in this. Fern, what happened? I wasn't expecting you back so soon.
Jim, stop driving. Quick.
Fern, what is it? You're shaking like a leaf.
Jim, that girl in there posing as Claire Austin isn't the same girl we saw on the boat.
What?
I knew you wouldn't believe me, but she isn't.
Well, what makes you think so?
Well, I'll admit she looks exactly like her and she sounds exactly like her, but it's not the same girl.
Now, Fern.
It's not, Jim. I can tell by her fingernails.
Her fingernails?
Yes. That girl on the boat had very short nails. I remember thinking that she looked as though she bit them. I got a good look at her left hand when Stamford had her wave in our direction.
Well, go ahead.
Well, that girl inside there has nails as long as an Oriental dancer.
Oh, Fern, I hate to dampen your enthusiasm over your great discovery, but Claire Austin has had 5 hours to put on artificial nails since that boat docked this morning.
But they're not artificial, Jim. I asked her.
Well, if that's the case, we've got a motive. That girl could be posing as Claire Austin to collect Claire's inheritance.
But What happened to Claire?
I don't know. But I think we'd better get in touch with Neil Hayden at once.
Oh, yes. He's the lawyer in charge of the Austin case, isn't he?
Yes.
Jim, all this adds up to the fact that the real Claire may have been kidnapped, doesn't it?
I'm afraid it does, Fern. And if we can't locate her before midnight tomorrow when she comes of age, she'll be in danger of her life. The Avenger and Death Meets the Boat. And that's the story, Neil. As the lawyer in charge of Miss Austin's estate, I hope you can delay the transfer of the property until we can find the real Claire.
Well, now, I can't hold back the clock, Jim. At midnight tomorrow, control of the Austin Millions passes into Claire's hands automatically.
But surely there's something we can do, Mr. Hayden. We can't just stand by and let the real Claire be killed and this imposter inherit her money.
Fern, I don't think Neil is much impressed with the story we've just told him. What about it, Neil?
Well, frankly, Jim, it sounds utterly fantastic. The length of a girl's fingernails is pretty slim evidence upon which to base a case of this magnitude. Now, I'd need something more to go on than that.
Well, if you can arrange for me to have a talk with this girl,
yeah.
I think I can find out whether she's the real Claire or not.
All right. I've arranged a little birthday party for her tonight. I'll take you along.
Fine. Oh, only remember, don't let her know I'm a detective.
I never think of you as a detective, Jim. To me, you're a scientist who sometimes dabbles a bit in criminology.
Hmm? You know, I don't think you intended that as a compliment.
Well, what about me? Don't I get invited to the party?
Oh, I'm afraid not, Fern. Miss Austin thinks you're a reporter, remember?
Well, Jim, have you managed to talk with Miss Austin yet?
No, I haven't. That fellow Merkel over there is monopolizing her. Who is he, Neil?
Merkel? Uh-huh. I don't know. Claire invited him, said he was an old friend. An importer, I think she said.
Merkel, never heard of him. Suppose we wander over and break up their little tete-a-tete, huh?
All right. But I sincerely hope your hunch is wrong, Jim.
So do I. Uh-oh, Merkel sees us coming.
Huh?
He's moving away.
Well, here's your opportunity, Jim. Oh, Claire?
Yes, Mr. Hayden?
Mr. Brandon is eager to have a chat with you about Australia. You know, he spent some time there himself.
Oh, really? What part of Australia, Mr. Brandon?
New South Wales, mostly. You come from Sydney, don't you?
Yes, that's right. Did you spend much time there?
No, I didn't. My travels took me farther inland. I was doing a little exploring.
I see.
You know, we Americans are always interested in the animals of Australia. The dodos, great auks, and wombats are fascinating.
Yes, they are. And don't forget the kangaroos. We're frightfully proud of those.
Yes, but but as pets, the wombats are more amusing.
Aren't they, though?
I suppose you owned one.
Oh, yes, a darling one. I'm arranging to have it sent over here as soon as I get settled.
Oh, excuse me, Claire, but the Websters are leaving. I thought you'd like to speak to them.
Thank you, Mr. Merkel.
Not at all.
Excuse me, Mr. Brandon, Mr. Hayden.
Of course, certainly, Claire. Well, Jim, as far as I could see, Miss Austin seemed to pass that examination all right.
On the contrary, Neil. That girl has been carefully coached, but she's never seen Australia.
Some party. You mean to tell me that's what the millionaires call having a good time?
I'm afraid you'll have to get used to it, Thelma.
I will not. As soon as I come into that money, Gus Merkel, I'm going away on a long vacation.
We'll talk about that later. Oh, that must be Coakley. Come in. Have all the servants gone to bed, Coakley?
Sure. I waited till the coast was clear.
Okay. Now, let's get down to business. First of all, what was that guy Brandon talking about tonight, Thelma?
Australia. He's traveled there.
What?
Ah, don't worry, Gus. I handled him all right. I let him do all the talking. I just followed suit with the generalities.
Okay. But steer clear of people like that until your coaching is over. Tomorrow, Thelma, you'll develop a headache and stay in your room all day.
Suits me.
Now, that brings us to the real Claire Austin. If everything goes without a hitch, we've got to get rid of her right after midnight tomorrow.
You should have done that first thing, Gus. Why are you waiting until the last minute to bump her off?
Because there's no point in hanging her murder around our necks until we're sure we've pulled this job off.
What's the difference? You might just as well be hanged for two murders as one.
Nobody calls Stanford's death murder. Even the paper he worked on called it an accident. I was plenty careful to make it look that way.
Well, who's going to take care of this Austin dame? And how?
Coakley, you know the plan. Get yourself up to the lodge tomorrow night and take care of it.
Not me, Gus. That's your job. I only agreed to finger this layout.
You'll do what I say, Coakley.
I tell you, I won't do it. I can't, Gus. I knew her old man for 10 years.
This isn't the time to turn soft, Coakley. From here on in, I'm the boss and you take orders from me.
Not that order.
Oh, then maybe a good mussing up will change your mind.
Gus, not here.
Here and now. Either he does what I say or I'll lay him out flat. Well, take your choice, Coakley.
All right. Let me alone. I'll do it.
Gus, I'd feel safer about that Austin girl if you took care of her. Coakley might get cold feet at the last minute and gum up everything.
Yeah. Yes, I'll have to go with him, I guess, and see that he carries out his assignment.
Jim, don't think I'm not enjoying this lovely ride in the country, but...
But you're dying to know what we're doing out here, right, Fern?
Yes. Why did you stop at that gasoline station back there? You didn't buy any gas.
No, but I got some information.
Jim, please. What's going on?
Well, Fern, here's the way I have things figured out. Coakley, the chauffeur, met the real Claire Austin at the boat. 3 hours later, he delivered the phony Claire Austin at her house in town.
Coakley was the one who kidnapped Miss Austin then.
Oh, he had to have a hand in it. Probably set up the job for a gang. A thing like this would take some organizing.
But what makes you so sure he brought her way out here?
Neil Hayden had Coakley's gas credit card checked for me. And the records show that Coakley gassed up at that station back there 3 times within the last few weeks. The station attendant remembers him. Says Coakley's car always turned off on this side road we're on now.
Oh, we're looking for the hideaway.
Yes. So keep your eyes peeled, Fern, because our time is running out.
Midnight. Maybe this isn't the house at all.
I'm sure it is, Fern.
There are two husky fellows guarding the front driveway.
But how do you plan to get inside the house, Jim?
When the criminals arrive, I'll go right in with them as the Avenger.
But what if the criminals should call up the guards here and tell them to kill Claire?
They can't, Fern. There are no telephone wires leading into that house. They'll have to show up in person.
Oh, I'm getting nervous, Jim.
Now, Fern, we can get Miss Austin out of there in a matter of minutes if we follow our plan.
Well, let's go over it again, Jim. I'd never forgive myself if I bungle my end of it.
But you won't, Fern. Now, here's the way we'll manage it. The moment I get inside the house, I'll unlock this back window. Miss Austin will come out and join you here. Then you two make tracks through the woods to our car and head straight for town.
What about you, Jim?
I'll join you later. Inspector White and Neil Hayden will meet you in front of Miss Austin's house in town. They'll escort the real heiress inside to face the imposter. They've arrived. I'll go around and join them at the corner of the house as the Avenger.
Good luck, Jim.
Come on, Copley. Let's make short work of this. Wait a minute. What was that noise?
Well, sounded like one of the tires went flat.
Well, get out your flash and take a look. We've got a lot of traveling to do in this car tonight.
Okay. Now, rear tires are all right. Have a look at the front ones here. Yeah, the front ones are all right, too. Nothing wrong here.
You sure?
Sure.
Come on, then. Open the front door. All right, Copley. Go into the next room and get the Austin dame. Take the bracelets off her and see that there are no marks where she was fastened to the bed. And don't use the blackjack until we get her in the car.
Why not? It'd be easier.
I want those two guards outside to see her alive when she leaves here. The less they know, the safer we are. Go ahead and I'll bring her out.
All right.
Oh, you've come back, Copley.
Yes, Miss Austin. We've decided to take you away from here.
Where? Where are you taking me?
Now, hold still. I'll take these handcuffs off your hands and feet.
Well, that's a relief anyway.
Miss Austin, through that window, quickly.
Who's that? Who's in here?
It's the Avenger, Copley. And this is for you.
Oh.
Hurry, Miss Austin. Through that window. Go with the young lady outside.
All right.
What's going on in there, Copley? Copley, can you...
What happened? Where's the girl? Copley!
He's out cold, Merkle. And here's something for you, too. From the Avenger.
Oh.
Claire Austin's birthday party is a great success, Jim. Even if it is a few days late.
Well, she can thank you for being alive to celebrate it, Fern. You know, if you hadn't noticed Thelma's fingernails, we might never have discovered she was an imposter.
Oh, Jim, you're just flattering me.
No.
The fingernails weren't the only clue you had. What really convinced you that Thelma wasn't Claire?
She failed on the examination I gave her about Australia.
How?
Well, aside from not knowing that the dodo has been extinct since the 17th century, she said she had a wombat for a pet and was bringing it here.
Well, a wombat's a small bear, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, that's right. But even an Australian school child knows that the wombat can't exist outside the Australian continent.
Oh, what a shame. It sounds like a nice pet.
Wrong again, Miss Collier. The wombat sleeps all day and wanders forth at night in search of food. Now, hardly the general conception of a pet, don't you think?
All right, teacher. Did the real Claire Austin pass that test?
With flying colors. And I'm sure if you really want a wombat for a pet, she'll order one stuffed and sent over by a special plane.
Oh, come on, Jim. Let's dance.
All characters, names, places, and plots used in the Avenger program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
The Avenger.
You are listening to the Golden Age of Radio with an episode of The Avenger, first broadcast on radio on November 2nd, 1945. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY 90.3 FM. In a moment, a 1943 Canadian Broadcast Company report from Dorothy Batchelor on rationing food for Christmas dinner. Right now, from 1940, enjoy The Baby from Krypton on the first episode of The Adventures of Superman, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Boys and girls, your attention, please. Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of an amazing and incredible personality. Faster than an airplane, more powerful than a locomotive, impervious to bullets.
Up in the sky, look, it's a bird,
it's a plane,
it's Superman!
And now, Superman, a being no larger than an ordinary man, but possessed of powers and abilities never before realized on Earth. Able to leap into the air an eighth of a mile at a single bound, hurdle a 20-story building with ease, race a high-powered bullet to its target, lift tremendous weights and rend solid steel in his bare hands as though it were paper. Superman, a strange visitor from a distant planet, champion of the oppressed, physical marvel extraordinary, who has sworn to devote his existence on Earth to helping those in need. As our story begins, we ask you to come with us on a far journey, A journey that takes us millions of miles from the Earth, where the planet Krypton burns like a green star in the endless heavens. Here, civilization is far advanced. It has brought forth a race of supermen, men and women like ourselves, but advanced to the absolute peak of human perfection. As we near Krypton, we see high walls and gleaming turrets. We approach the magnificent Temple of Wisdom, and there in a great hall, Jor-El, Krypton's foremost man of science, is about to address a meeting of the planet's governing council.
Attention! Attention, gentlemen! Jor-El speaks!
Members of the council, I have completed my solar calculations, and much as I dread uttering these words, I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! Gentlemen, hear him out.
These internal quakes we've been experiencing, these volcanic eruptions, tidal waves, gas escaping from giant craters, all point to only one thing, gentlemen. Krypton is utterly and finally doomed.
Why, the man's mad. He's absolutely
mad. One moment, gentlemen. One moment. There is no cause for anxiety. I am certain Jor-El has made a mistake. True, we have had a few minor quakes and eruptions, but nothing very serious. There must be some error in your calculations, Jor-El.
No, no, there is no error, Ozan. I only wish there were. The sun is gradually drawing Krypton closer to it. Within a month, possibly only a week, the gravitational pull will be so tremendous that Krypton will not be able to weather the strain. And then our planet will explode like a giant bubble, destroying every living thing on it.
Gentlemen, assuming for the moment, Jor-El, that what you say is true, how are we to avoid it? What can we do to stop it?
There is only one way. As you all know, I have been working on a spaceship designed for interplanetary travel. With time and united effort, we might transport the entire population of Krypton to another world.
Impossible. Where would we go?
To the Earth. My studies tell me the atmosphere of the Earth is very nearly the same as our own.
You have been working too hard, Jor-El. You need a rest. Believe me, we have the utmost respect for your knowledge and integrity. But this is carrying it too far. Planets as large as Krypton do not explode, Jor-El.
Wait! Do you hear that, gentlemen? It's the forewarning of doom. Every moment is precious now. Quakes like that are sounding the death knell of Krypton. It will happen, gentlemen, and happen soon. When the last great eruption comes...
When it comes, Jor-El, it shall find all of us ready. If Krypton is to die, we shall die with it. The parting would be much too severe.
Very well. Laugh if you like, Roseanne. And you, members of the council. I have no time to laugh. My wife, Lara, and my infant son are dear to me. It is not my wish to stand by and see them destroyed. Laugh, all of you. But a time will come, and that time is perhaps very close at hand, when you will wish you had heeded the words of Jor-El. Now you think me a fool, but remember what I have said, gentlemen. When Krypton is shattered into 1,000,000,000 stars, when the glorious civilization we have built is no more, when you and your families are swept from the face of Krypton like dust!
Order, gentlemen. Order. You have heard Jor-El speak. Is it your wish that we devote time and money to the building of spaceships for the transportation of Krypton's population to another planet?
No!
I'm sorry, Jor-El. The Council has spoken.
Yes, and signed the death warrants of every living thing on Krypton. Well, I have done my best to convince you. Now all that remains for me is to proceed with my own means of salvation, my own spaceship, to save the lives of those near and dear to me. As for the rest of you, may the gods have mercy on your souls.
Jor-El is mad. He is absolutely mad.
Lara,
I didn't see you.
I came out to take the air on the terrace. It's been terribly hot all day. Is that because we're being drawn to the sun, Jurel?
Yes.
What did the council have to say about that?
I didn't mention it.
Is the model of your spaceship almost finished?
Yes, yes, I just drove the last rivet. How does it look?
Splendid. But will it work?
Ah, that remains to be seen. If it does work, I shall immediately begin construction of another just like it, only much larger. One big enough to carry all three of us to another world.
Jurel, when will that be? Every moment that we spend waiting and wondering...
Yes, I know, Lara. It's been hard on all of us, and particularly hard on you. How is the boy?
Sleeping, Jurel. That quake this afternoon frightened him. But he's all right now. Can't you come in and look at him? You scarcely see him these days, what with working all hours on the spaceship model.
It can't be helped, dear. I'm racing against time. Right now, I'm anxious to know whether the model will behave as I hope.
How does it operate?
Very simply. When all is ready, I throw this switch. That closes the circuit, and electric energy builds up pressure in the atomic generators. Then, at the final moment, the pressure forces the ship from its carrier and speeds it on its way.
But where does it go?
Wherever it's pointed. This one I'm directing to the planet Earth.
Earth? What is that, Jerome?
A planet smaller than our own, situated on the other side of the sun. It's inhabited by a race of people similar to ourselves.
Like ourselves?
Well, only partly, of course, my dear. They're about the same size, but nowhere nearly as developed. Very weak and helpless, and with all their faculties extremely limited.
How do you mean?
It's something like this. You know how far you step when you want to go somewhere?
Practically as far as I want. Why, one step takes me to Bratta's house near the fountain.
Exactly. Well, down where I'm sending this spaceship, it's quite different. An Earthman steps only 3 feet at a time at most, and everything else is in proportion.
And that's where we're going? Oh, how dreadful.
My dear, which would you rather do? Go to Earth and live, or stay on Krypton and die?
I'll do anything you say, Jurel, anything. It doesn't matter to me whether we live or die as long as we're together. It's only the boy I worry about.
Yes, I know. Oh, Lara, darling, don't worry. He'll be saved.
When are you testing the spaceship model?
In the morning. Just as dawn breaks, I'll send it on its way, watching its flight through a high-powered telescope to see whether it lands safely on Earth.
Is Earth the only planet place we can go to, Jurel?
We couldn't breathe on any other planet but the Earth. It happens to have an atmosphere similar to Krypton's.
I suppose you know best, Jurel. Are you coming in? It seems to have gotten oppressively hot.
Yes, it has. I wonder... Lara, do you hear that?
Yes, Jurel. What is it?
Subterranean explosions. Do you feel the ground trembling?
Yes, I do. Jurel, do you think...
Lara. Lara, I'm afraid it's come. Where is the boy, Kal-El?
What do you mean?
Get him quickly. This is the end.
Jurel, what can we do?
Nothing, nothing. I'm not ready. Oh, what a fool I've been to delay.
It isn't your fault, Jurel. You did all you could.
If only this model were large enough, we could take a chance.
Jurel, would it carry one of us safely to Earth?
Oh, I think so, but... Lara, where are you going? Stay here with me.
I'm getting Kal-El. If one of us can be saved, Jurel, it should be the boy.
No, no, Lara, come back. If one must go, it should be you. Lara, I said come back. Come back.
Here he is, Jurel. Still asleep. Goodbye, Kal-El.
Please, Lara.
No, Jurel, listen to me. We both stay here. Kal-El goes in the spaceship. If there is a chance, Jurel, one little chance I wanted for my son.
Maybe you're right, Lara.
Jurel, look. The sky. It's fiery red. The mountains. Look, the mountains are falling in. Jurel, what's happening?
The end of Krypton, Lara. Just as I foretold. This is the last great quake.
Jurel, listen. Explosions.
Here, quick, give me the boy.
Kal-El. What are you doing, Jurel?
Opening the door, putting him inside.
Jurel, the house, it's swaying. It's breaking apart. Look, Jurel.
There, he's safe inside. Now for the switch. Stand back, Lara.
Oh, Jurel, will he reach the Earth?
Only the gods know. But there's a chance, the only chance. Stand back now, Lara. I'm going to throw the switch.
Jurel, it's getting dark. I can't see. What happened?
Fire. Smoke from the center of the planet. Not much time now.
Hold me, Jurel. Has the spaceship gone?
No, not yet. Waiting for pressure. We may have been too late. If it doesn't work up soon... Wait! Lara! It's off! It's on its way!
Jurel, where are you?
Here beside you, Lara. Listen, can you hear me? Our boy, Kal-El. Our son, Lara. He's on his way. On his way to Earth.
Kal-El! Kal-El!
So the tiny rocket ship roars into the uncharted heavens as the mighty planet of Krypton explodes into millions of glowing fragments, glittering stars to remain forever in the night sky. Jor-El and Lara, devoted parents of the tiny boy, perish in the giant quake that destroys Krypton. But what of the rocket ship? Does it reach the Earth? Does it find its mark in all the far-flung darkness of space? Remember, don't miss the next installment of Superman.
Up in the sky, look! It's a giant bird!
It's a plane!
It's Superman! Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Despite years of faithful brushing, despite any other toothpaste you've tried, see if your teeth aren't noticeably brighter in just 1 week after you change to Pepsodent toothpaste. Pepsodent toothpaste with Irium removes the film that makes your teeth look dull. So forget other brands you've tried. Change to Pepsodent toothpaste. And in just 1 week, see the difference in the brightness of your teeth, the sparkle of your smile.
As Christmas approaches, the kitchen becomes a hive of industry, doesn't it? It's the most fascinating room in the house to the small fry, too, with its warmth and tantalizing odors. But for Mother, unless she's a good organizer, the hive of industry is apt to become a frenzied flurry with everything piling up and nothing going the way it should. This year, more than ever before, it's the wise woman who has planned her menus well in advance with plenty of room for changes, in case she has to, at the last moment, substitute foods which are available for those which aren't. With the celebration of our fifth wartime Christmas, we're very fortunate indeed to have so many foods available. Now, I was speaking to some people the other day who had recently arrived in Canada from England. They were astonished at the luxury of life here. So much food, so little regard for waste. They said it was like coming to a pre-war world. In England, they said you just didn't dare leave food on your plate. You felt obliged to eat it all up whether you wanted to or not. Or if anyone was looking at you and they saw food on your plate, well, they made you feel like crawling under the table. Well, even though according to our conception at least, our celebrations will be very simple this year, they still require a great deal of planning, to say nothing about the actual preparations. If you haven't completed a Christmas work plan yet, let me tell you how the consumer section suggests that you work it out. To begin with, we will assume that you have the Christmas pudding, mincemeat, and fruitcake made and out of the way, or at least arranged for. Now, why not consider the whole Christmas weekend in your meal plan? Choose those menus for which a great deal of advance preparation can be made, and which are elastic enough to take care of any unexpected guests. A buffet-style supper Christmas Eve is ideal, and easy to arrange, with everyone helping himself. Pass around fireside tea on Christmas evening is also easy on the hostess, and people usually don't require a substantial supper after a Christmas dinner. We've found that it helps considerably to take stock of your shelves, check your staples, and order anything you need a week before Christmas. That would be by next weekend. Or at the latest, by the Tuesday before Christmas. It means one less thing to have to fuss about later on, and will avoid that maddening last-minute search for poultry seasoning or some other thing which seems to have vanished from the pantry shelf at the crucial moment. You will have probably also placed your turkey order, or your chicken or goose order, whatever it is you're serving for the main course, by next weekend, or will be doing so the first of the following week. Other things which can be crossed off the list early are cranberry jelly. You can make it, pour it into sterilized molds or glasses, and store it well covered in a cool place until needed. Cookies which store well, salad dressings, and so on, can also be made in advance. But I don't have to warn you to hide the cookies well, or they may disappear before the required time. Here's an elastic sort of schedule for Christmas week. Monday should really find you with the details of your week and menus completed, your final shopping list made out, and everything under control. Tuesday, you might complete as much of the shopping as possible, leaving only the perishable foods to be picked up later in the week. Wednesday should see the last of the baking completed. Pastry for mincemeat, tarts, cheese straws, etc. can be prepared, wrapped well in wax paper and stored in the refrigerator, ready to be rolled out and baked at a moment's notice. Thursday, the bread for the stuffing can be prepared. Friday, you can wash the salad greens, prepare the celery, make your carrot sticks, etc., and put them in the crisper in the refrigerator. Or, if you haven't a crisping compartment, a kettle or roaster with a tight-fitting lid may be used and stored in the icebox or a cool place. It will do the crisping job very, very nicely. The turkey, goose, or chicken may be stuffed Friday also, though some people prefer to leave that for Christmas Day since it really tends to make the dressing a bit soggy. Some pudding sauces may be made the same day or the day before Christmas. Choose one of these that can be made the day before and so eliminate one more last-minute job if you like. Christmas morning, some of the vegetables may be prepared early, but please don't let them stand in water until you're ready to cook them. No one approves of that nowadays. They lose too much of their mineral and vitamin content. Instead, prepare those vegetables which don't darken on exposure to air, such as carrots, turnips, etc. Then wrap them well in wax paper or a clean, dampened towel. Put them in a bowl or pan with a lid and keep in a cool place, preferably the refrigerator, until you're ready to cook them. Of course, we don't recommend keeping fresh vegetables standing any longer than absolutely necessary, even this way, because of the destruction of vitamins that takes place. If you have a plan of your own to follow, you know how much easier it is on you, and instead of being a nervous wreck on Christmas Day, you can really enjoy the celebration as much as anyone. Well, good luck with your preparations.
Are you able to brush your own teeth? Not everyone can. Not a man whose arms have been crippled by polio. There are thousands of disabled polio survivors who must depend on someone else to help them perform the simplest, most personal acts. With your help, many polio victims can learn how to be independent. Right now, there are 100,000 survivors of crippling polio who need help. They need your dimes and dollars to pay for expensive care and equipment. Your contributions will provide trained hands to teach a polio survivor how to live with his disability. Thanks to you, a polio-scarred life will once again seem worth living. Remember, your generosity is the one hope of thousands for whom soft vaccine came too late. Join the 1958 March of Dimes.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and a 1943 Canadian Broadcast Company report from Dorothy Batchelor. We also heard the first episode of The Adventures of Superman, first broadcast on radio on February 12, 1940. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.